So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Time to play the game. Time to play the game! It's all about the game, and how you play it, all about control, and if you can take it, all about your debt, and if you can pay it, it's all about pain, and who's gonna make it? I am the game, you don't wanna play me, I am control, no way you can shake me, I am heavy debt, no way you can pay me, I am the pain, and I know you can't take me, look over your shoulder, ready to run, like a craven bitch from a smoking gun, I am the game, and I may lose, so move on out, you can die like a fool, try to figure out what my mood's gonna be, come on over, son, why don't you ask me? Don't you forget there's a price you can pay, cause I am the game and I want to play.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome once again to the Ed Springsteen Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com. For all the latest investigations and news that we are covering, check out LouisvillePolitics.com. Don't forget to join our RSS feed and our email newsletter once you get there. I tell you what, we've always got something going on. Looks like Mr. Martin will be a couple of minutes late tonight, apparently. Hopefully not as late as he was last night, but we'll figure it out when he gets here. In the meantime, a lot of things are really starting to go crazy. We go through the news every day, and we're trying to find relevant stories for you, the listener. And we want to thank the tens of thousands of you guys who listen to our show every day. We really do. We appreciate it. But I guess before I go any further, I better point this out. The call-in numbers, as always, 858-683-1326, or in the Louisville area, 502-805-0334. Or for you guys that are already in the listening queue, we appreciate you being there. Just hit that little number one on your dial pad, and we'll know you want to get on air. But there's never a shortage of stories. One of the most amazing ones I found today has to do with Florida. Like, Florida don't have enough going on with the George Zimmerman trial and the Trayvon Martin shooting and all of that. And we'll get to the George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin stuff here in a few minutes. But it's really fascinating coming out of Florida. They actually did something boneheaded. Hello, Mr. Martin. How are you?
All right, Mr. Springsteen. I don't know what I've stepped into here. Coming out of Florida.
Yeah, well, that's
boneheaded.
Nothing new.
My God, damn it. You're not going to give me a chance to be politically correct, are you?
No, but we got you to come in right when I said bonehead. Was that coincidence? I think not. But that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Our good friend Ken Molman was on air Sunday night on the Liberty Unbridled show right here on the MVM Radio Network. You guys need to go listen to this show, but it was really interesting. Florida, as we know, has got all kinds of problems right now. They're scared they're going to have a racial war and everything else after the George Zimmerman trial is over. But miraculously, a lot of people have not paid attention to one of the most boneheaded things I think I've ever seen. And basically, Florida decided that they were going to put a bill out that was going to ban internet cafes and slot machines. They didn't want anybody betting online through internet cafes and slot machines. So the purpose of the ban was to kill these things that allow customers to gamble online so they couldn't play bingo or slot types, anything like that. Immediately, once this bill went into effect in April, immediately, 1,000 of these internet cafes shut down right away. Apparently, we now have an owner of one of those internet cafes that got shut down. Consuelo Zapata has decided that something's not quite right about this. Turns out that in this law, the wording was so vague, and I'll read it to you. The key of this law is what the wording was. The wording said, and this is a quote, "The ban defines illegal slot machines as any system or network of devices that may be used in a game of chance." Now, this is America in the 21st century. Practically everything we do is a system or a network of devices. Your cell phones now have smart, you're always online on your cell phones, your laptops, your iPads.
I saw a little bit of that article, but I didn't read it, you know, because it's Florida, you know, land of the dangling chat or whatever. But you realize that anything that can be used as a game of chance, this idiot just outlawed coins.
Sure. That's it.
Where you want to go? You know, put two coins. You playing odd even, or are you playing heads tails? I mean, heads tails. You know.
Well, yeah, you know, and I don't even go that
pieces.
Far.
Now they have to mint coins with the same side. They can't have.
You know, I never even went that far. I'm glad you brought that up because I hadn't even thought about that. Could the coin? I mean, if you go to a slot machine or something, could a coin be considered a device? Because you have to put a coin into the slot machine to play, right? So is that considered a device that could be used in a game of chance? You know, they might have just outlawed pennies, nickels, dimes, and quarters in Florida too. Can they ban federal money?
Yeah, just flipping a coin, you know. But I mean, you think of anything. They're going to start cutting people's hands off if they do play rock, paper, scissors, or eagle claws on a baseball bat, maybe. you know, he's got supposed to be a Republican down there and supposed to be a conservative. Get the hell out of people's lives. They want to piss some money away on an internet cafe gambling site, you know, linking up through their Wi-Fi. Let them. It's their money. They earned it, you know.
I just think that story is so fascinating. Truthfully, I've got to agree. I mean, I got this story off of Gizmodo, like I said, from a good friend, Kim Moman, on the Liberty Unbridled show right here on NBM. But, you know, the story, the original story appeared in Miami Herald and the Huffington Post and all kinds of stuff. But I like the way that this little article ends. It says that I'm secretly hoping the courts decide that banning all computers and smartphones is a lawful thing to do in Florida just to see what will happen. I think I agree with that. I would love to see Florida ban computers and smartphones to try this. If you remember it, and our good friend Rob Chapman, the IT guy here at NVM in Louisville Politics, you know, he has been on a rant for quite some time. Kentucky decided they were going to outlaw online gambling in the state of Kentucky. You know, I didn't get a chance to research our laws concerning that today, but I am curious to see if they are worded as pathetically as this is. I wish Rob was here right now because I'd love to ask him. But, you know, Kentucky has banned online gambling, and practically a lot, most of the U.S. has, really. You know, a lot of these places were offshore gambling places and things like that, tax havens, stuff like that. But I find it very interesting that now they think they can ban computers, you know, smartphones, you know, nickels, dimes, and quarters, if you will. I mean, according to this, you can ban just about anything you want. It's the most pathetic language I think I've seen in a long time on a bill. And personally, I wish they'd lose on the internet cafe anyway, because I think it's ridiculous to shut down an internet cafe. It creates jobs and creates income, so why are you messing with it? But that story I thought was really, really interesting. Here's one that I want to get into. We're going to switch to Zimmerman and Martin here shortly. But here's one I want to get into, Ed, because this is disturbing. You know, if you want to go to Independent Journal Review, You can check out their story here. But they list six economic stats that show you just how bad it really is right now. One of those, I'm going to go through all six of them, because the first one says that today we have 101 million food aid recipients. What that essentially means is a third of the U.S. population, total U.S. population, is now on food stamps, and the number of Americans receiving food stamps is greater than the number of private sector workers that are paying for those stamps in the United States. This information is new, folks. This just got released 2 days ago, and it was posted late yesterday on Independent Journal. What does that tell us, Ed?
Well, it could tell us a lot of things. It could tell us a lot of people aren't able to earn enough money. Tells us a lot of people aren't willing to earn enough money to feed their families. Tells us, as my father used to say, that maybe in some cases people are screwing themselves into poverty because, if you're thinking things through, expanding your family and growing your family is a function of your income. And, it tells us a lot of things, but, it's the mathematics of it. It's unsustainable when you got more people on the till than you do putting into the kitty. You've got yourself a problem, and it's systemically unsustainable.
Well, I'm glad that you put it that way, because this comes to number two. Currently, the U.S. has had 54, you heard me right, 54, 4.5 years, 54 straight months of unemployment at 7.5% or above. This is telling, because this is during Barack Obama's entire presidency. Since January 2009, when Barack Obama was inaugurated as president, we every month have seen unemployment at 7.5% or higher. And that's just what they admit to. We know that it's greatly higher than that. But that's the longest stretch of unemployment that's at or above 7.5% since, get this, 1948. So is it any wonder that we have 101 million Americans on food stamps? And, we continue further. We want to look at the next one, the long-term unemployment. Out of the 11.8 million jobless Americans that we had in June, almost half of those have been out of work 6 months or longer. 6 months or longer. We've got a disturbing trend here. We're continuing to see this economy. Now, remember, when Barack came in, we were going to have all of these jobs, we were going to have all of these things, hope and change, all of that stuff. And we've gotten entirely worse, as we knew we would with the liberal mindset. And another startling thing here, Ed, and I'm going to get you to expand on this stuff in just a second, the labor participation rate. That's the number of the people not in the labor force. The number of people not in the labor force in March.
Yeah, they got to be working age and able-bodied.
Right.
So we can't. We're not counting 70-year-olds.
Yeah, we're not counting those people.
Or 14-year-olds.
Right. But the number of people not in the labor force, and in March, that number soared by 663,000 to a record, 90 million Americans who are no longer even looking for work. The labor force participation rate jumped down to a 63.3%. That's the lowest since 1979. Now, when we look at this, and again, we've got to really put the blame where it lies. You've got a Democratic Senate. You've got a Democratic president. The Senate's stopping everything. The House can do any damn thing they want to do, but the Senate and the president will stop it. And we see clearly what the liberal agenda is doing to us. Because here we've got 90 million Americans. Now, when you look at America, and man, Paul Holliger, I hope he's listening somewhere. He might be able to put this in the chat room for me. He's a stats master. But there's over 300 million Americans in the United States. That counts your babies, your kids, disabled, anybody and everybody who can't work or anything else. We're going to get to those numbers in a second. But you're talking about over 300 million Americans in the U.S., half of who are work age, somewhere between 160 and 180 million are work age that could qualify to work. And we've got over 90 million of them who can't find a job and are basically not even counted anymore in most cases on unemployment. So that's startling, Ed. I mean, where are we headed here? Do I need to go further?
Well, but it gets worse that so much of the job creation, I actually posted something about it today, that much of the job creation is not in full-time work, as if in a lot of cases full-time work pays well enough, but it's not in full-time work. So not only were we not employed, you know, the traditional beaver cleaver's dad goes to work thing and provides the family, not happening because there's no full, you know, the full-time work is not growing. The labor participation rate is shrinking. And that's even counting the part-time workers who, you know, maybe it was a full-time job to begin with, but thanks to regulations and bureaucracy, you've got a bunch of employers out there going, nope. We're flipping that at 27 hours, bud. That's how much work we have available for you. You know,
well, that's
true. If you go out and get two jobs, you know, and if the same guy goes out and gets two jobs, well, he counts twice because he's got two jobs. Neither one of them will give him full-time work. If he goes out and lands two jobs, he gets counted twice. In the, you know, so it's,
oh, agreed.
It's much worse. It's
agreed.
Much worse.
And when you look at
it,
well, and we look at what's going on with small business, too, and I know that's your bread and butter. And when we look at what's going on with small business accounts for over 70% of all jobs in the United States today, private sector jobs. And, yes, small business is the one part of this economy that we continue to ignore in favor of big-time corporate interests, bank bailouts, and GE subsidies. I mean, this is an orchestrated plan that people don't want to put out there. The United States of America is on a path to become a third world status nation very, very quickly, and it's all by design. I don't think there's any disputing that anymore. I don't think there is. It's incredible to me how far we've fallen. Let me go to the phones real quick, Ed, before I get to the last 2 points before we move on.
All right.
I think this might be Mayo. Is this Mayo?
That it is, sir.
How are you, sir? What can we do for you?
Doing good. I just heard, you know, talking about the businesses and, you know, the part-time. What kills me is, you know, the Dems, when Bush was in office, they kept touting, oh, well, he's not using the real unemployment rate. Okay, well, how come they're not using the real unemployment rate with Obama? They keep continually using the E3 instead of the E6. So the real unemployment rate is closer to 15% right now, not 7.6. So
you can't be
matter.
A liberal. You can't be a liberal Democrat. Well, yeah, but that makes sense to me. I mean, you can't be a liberal Democrat, promise everybody something for nothing, and then back it up and show them the reality of what it's costing. That'd just be silly. How do you keep power then? No, I agree with where you're going, Mayo. And that is the problem, because we continue to have this double standard and this hypocrisy, especially in mainstream media. And we're going to show a lot of that here in a few minutes. But, it is appalling to me, as it is to you guys, that we continue going down this road. And nobody is standing up. We will sit here and applaud Egyptians for standing up, ousting Morsi, and trying to act like, you know, they want democracy. And we here at home, we want to turn our backs and shut our heads. Here's another one I want you guys to think about. Mayo, I'm going to keep your mic open for a minute, all right?
All right.
Here's another one I want you guys to think about. Ed Barton, the total number of people in the United States today that receive federal Social Security disability benefits hit a record of 10,962,532 people in April. That's a new record for federal disability benefits. And to give you some idea of what that means, the entire nation of Greece has a population of less than that. The entire nation of Greece that we continue to use because of their financial meltdown has a population of 10,815,000 people. So the people we're paying on disability outnumber a major country. You know, Greece may not be considered a major country to some, but they're all over the news and are portrayed as one. And our number of federal disability is outnumbering Greece. I thought that was pretty incredible. And then finally, let's look at the poverty rate. You know, when the president began, you know, earlier this year, began his second term, the U.S. poverty rate rose higher than it's been since the 60s. According to the Census Bureau, 50 million Americans, roughly 1 in 6 Americans, it's almost 17%, are living below the poverty line. And there's 20% of the nation's children are living in poverty. So 1 in 5 of our kids are living in poverty. That's just what they tell us. And that's not real either, because we don't count the other half of the unemployment factor, like Mayo pointed out. Ed, there's your 6 common things that we know. What's the deal?
Well, I think first, you know, I know you rant and rave about the Democrats taking over and things going to hell in a handbasket. You know, and they made a lot of promises. And I said this back when they got elected, when Obama got elected. You know, and I also said it when we were in the midst of the reception, you know, about the Republican candidate. Like, who in the hell wants, you know, who in the right mind wants a piece of this? Because it was systemic. Now, when they were making all their promises, just my personal opinion back in 2008 was, like, of course they're making the promises. What they're doing, they're looking statistically at how long recessions last. I figured no matter what they did, you know, it's almost like you could just close your eyes and take your hands off the steering wheel. Cool. Recessions corrected themselves. But, you know, I hate to say it, but I sat back and said, this is not a typical recession. Its roots are much deeper than you think. It doesn't matter what you do. You're not gonna fix it. This one's been building for a while, and that's the thing. You know, just like network news, I wish people, the politicians, would be honest with us and tell us the real roots of the recession. And it's like, hey, you know, there's a real cure. But they won't do it because it involves pain and it involves a little introspective where you look at yourself and everybody has to look at themselves and go, yep, it's what I did. I played my role. So, yeah, I mean, it's just, all the stats and everything, they go in one ear and out the other, most of the people, because they're going to want to get on to Zimmerman, Paula Deen, you know.
Sure.
I don't know. What else? What you know, like Kim and Kanye?
they want the National Enquirer. They want the National Enquirer headlines because, let's face it, everybody loves to read about that. Nobody wants to see the reality. But, you know, one of the things that we've mentioned on the show, we haven't really talked about a lot lately, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on it tonight because I really do want to spend the second half of the show on the Zimmerman Trayvon Martin trial. But, you know,
you
we
do?
Talk about the – yes, I do. I'm getting sick of this mainstream media farce in that trial trying to force people to a preconceived outcome that's not – has anything to do with fairness or innocence or guilt. But that's – we'll get into that in a minute. But when we look at this, though, we're not even looking at all the things. Last night we mentioned that Obamacare – has now gotten somewhat of a reprieve till 2015. Now you can lie to the federal government and get Obamacare approved. You know, the Department of Health and Human Services back in March knew that this online insurance marketplace that they were talking about and these insurance exchanges were a joke. That's why they've been rushing to try to get everything simplified, hoping that they can make it easier for everybody. That didn't work. You know, now we're looking at these insurance exchanges. We now know that they're probably illegal, but it's not going to matter. They're going to get what they want. But it's interesting that, you know, when you look at the big story here and you look at the Department of Health and Human Services knew all of this, why were they not doing anything about it? Now, we've got another out today. You know, Obamacare has already increased. Now, this is before it's even fully implemented, folks. Remember this. They haven't collected one single dollar for Obamacare. It's not being implemented yet at all. But, you know, Senator Orrin Hatch wrote a letter to the Obama administration wanting to know why the president is already requesting 107% more in a budget to pay for these Obamacare subsidies. 107%. We knew they were lying about the price going in, and we've talked about that, Ed, but even I didn't know it was going to be more than double before they even collected one dime. You know, they have lowballed everything. They knew that they were lowballing it. They were lying to the people. Now they're trying to act like they didn't know they didn't have enough money. How long has Obamacare been going on? How stupid are these people? And this economy is going to get better? Talk to me, Ed.
Well, you know, like I said, Obamacare, they went in too big. That's always the problem. And even as I – and there's no reason for them not to know what it costs because as I was saying back when I was a candidate and they were arguing for it, look, 40% of the U.S. medical and health care industry was already paid for and managed effectively by the government. So they know what they're doing. You know, they do it basically for almost half the industry. So why they couldn't pull their heads out of the asses and figure out why – they couldn't make this other half, you know, if they were going to eventually usurp it and absorb the other half of the healthcare industry, why couldn't they be honest about it? Why couldn't they give us numbers and say, okay, well, if we're doing 40% on this side, the worst that could happen is it would cost, you know, 150% of what we're already doing. Throw the number out there. It's not that complicated, but yeah, there's all sorts of other variables that they're simply not factoring in. You know, it's just when it comes to driving the costs, you know, increased demand and things like that. I mean, I think to a degree they do. I mean, we've seen it, you and I have seen it for years in the government, whether it's state, local, or federal. They'll come up with a plan. They'll focus a whole lot more on selling it than implementing it. They'll spend a whole lot more time on selling it than they do working all the kinks out and getting, you know, and designing it properly. So, you know, I've accused politicians of that, Democrats. It's like, look, you know, why are you getting a reprieve? It's because you rushed together. You're all happy. You know, it's like a college student taking whatever they are, 357 Magnum caffeine pills. You were giddy, and they wanted to run this thing through, and they did a crappy job. So then once they got it passed, they went into sales mode. They didn't go into, okay, you know, let's go back through it. Let's read it, Ms. Pelosi. And before the rubber hits the road, let's get some stuff refined. No, that's not what they did. They had a guy like John Yarmouth doing public, you know, speaking with a football helmet on. Ha ha, real funny. It's not so funny now, is it? But, that's just what it is. They sell it. Like I said last night, they're going to get people no background checks, no essentially free health care, you know, lie about it, whatever. You might get caught better down the road. Then again, the government will probably say, well, there were just too many. We're going to give them amnesty. You know, we'll go back and fix it. They're just trying to get as many adherents as they can so that eventually this thing gets dug in, malignant as it is. It gets dug in. People get addicted to it like meth. And then there's no turning back. Then they can say, okay, well, now that it's here, now that it has a look to it like it's permanent, we're going to need to fund it more. We're going to need to grow it more. We're going to need to do this. So they're just trying to get it dug in right now. They're trying to get it dug in so that they cannot be denied more money, more power later down the road to expand it.
Go ahead, Mayo.
There's another problem that's been creeping up, and it hasn't been talked about a lot in the United States. They've mentioned it in the news, but it's been in relation to Japan and I think China, and I can't remember the term it's used, but used to, let's say, in the 50s or 60s, the retirement age of 65 versus the average working age back then was like 25 or 27, let's say. I can't remember what they call that ratio. Well, now its retirement age is like age 37 or 41 in the United States. And the thing is that Obamacare didn't take into effect is we are getting ready to have the baby boomer generation, which has already started. So they said 10 years, over the next 9 years, you're going to have like a third of the whole population retire. And then maybe 10 years after that, need nursing care, health care, long-term care, et cetera. And that infrastructure isn't in place. The other part, which is, you know, I sent you a link, may have been another reason why the mandate was pushed back, is mm-hmm. the infrastructure for Obamacare is not there. The story from Reuters, they called it Obamacare 1.0, put out June 30th, they talked about how, you know, you or I get online and then how it's supposed to work. So I get online and I put in my Social Security number. Well, now the Social Security Administration server is supposed to open up to me, and then I put in the IRS thing. Well, now the Social Security is supposed to connect to the Internal Revenue Service. Well, then I put my employer's, you know, information. Then they're supposed to be able to contact whatever database for the employers. And then if I, you know, whether I qualify for the Medicaid program, if I make less or part-time work, et cetera, then it's supposed to connect me to the Medicaid server, and it is not supposed to drop me or tell me, oh, contact us again in a week. It's supposed to be, you know, right then, immediate, because that is your application. None of that infrastructure is in place because none of the programmers, none of the networkers or anyone has been paid to do it. I mean, they've had some tests, and some of the companies have written some little stuff for it, but
well, this actually reinforces everything, you know, because, you know, Ed just mentioned, you know, I'm kind of being hard on liberals right now, which I am, because liberals have the power right now to make this happen. But on this show, we constantly talk about the Uniparty. The Uniparty is alive and well, and when you mention the baby boomers, there's not over the next 9 years, you know, the rest of that third of the baby boomers are going to finish retiring. When you talk about that, you're actually reinforcing exactly what we mean by uniparty. Because, you know, we don't give the Republicans a free ride on this either. From 2000 to 2006, in the 2000 elections, the Republicans got the power and they got the control. George Bush became the president. You had a Republican House. You had a Republican Senate. Okay? Bush had what he wanted. The Republicans had what they wanted. They knew that in less than 10 years, we were going to be facing this problem. If you remember, they were talking about trying to privatize part of Social Security and everything else at one point. They knew that we were going to have this problem, that these baby boomers were going to be here. So when we talk about Obama and the liberal Democrats not paying attention to that today, I agree with that 100%. But understand that the Republicans in the Uniparty don't give a shit either, and that's the truth of it. For 8 years, Bush was in office, the first 6 years, knowing that the baby boomers, because you're supposed to plan ahead when you're president, knowing that the baby boomers were going to be a problem in 5 or 6 years or so, that's a small amount of time, and they didn't address it either. So, you know, Mayo, you bring up some excellent points there, and that's why we continue talking
also,
about the Uniparty.
You know, and, you know, as I always say, while we're on this insurance tangent, I said for years, same thing. Republicans absolutely controlled D.C. for a long time. And I told people, and it might cause me problems at some point as a Republican now, but I've said, I blame the Republicans for Obamacare because for the better part of 10 years, they were in power and they didn't do anything. They, you know, every year your private insurance would go up, you know, that every year, you know, like you said, the boomers were coming, so the new Medicare and Medicaid was going to get hit. Every year it happened, and nobody reformed anything, so, I mean, you know, it's just
sure.
Joke at work. It's like, oh, well, guess what time it is? It's like, well, Ed's walking around looking pretty pissed off. Must be health insurance renewal time.
Yeah, but the public sector.
It's like, what's going to happen? We're going to get hit with, you're only going up 15%. Then he's like having a party. I mean, we saw.
But see, that's the thing, though,
increase.
Isn't it? Because while the private sector was suffering from these decisions, one sec, may I want to get you right in. While the private sector was suffering from these decisions and stuff, what did the public sector do, though, guys? The public sector increased their retirement. They made everything a lot better for their retirement. The public unions get to leave at 40 or 41 years old on the taxpayer dime, not a Ford Motor Company or a die board marketing. No, none of that. So the public sector actually got a bigger and better golden parachute retirement plan during these times, because they knew what was coming, so let the taxpayers pay for it. But the private sector got the chef. Go ahead, Mayo.
Well, here's the thing that kills me. You know, since Ed Martin brought it up, and I mean, the word keeps coming in the conversation, insurance. Well, SSI, Social Security Insurance, when it was written, it was never, ever supposed to have been able to be touched by the federal government because it was the people's money. Okay.
Right.
If it had never been touched, I can't remember the president, there would be, I've read anywhere from like 5.7 to 9.1 trillion extra or something, enough to take care of everyone that's paid into it. But in, what was it, the 50s or 60s, they dipped into it and it has gone down. Well, how come nobody has said anything about that? You know, I mean, the first, it's dry reading, but, you know,
well,
somewhere within the first 30 pages of it.
Just like out of your paycheck, they started counting Social Security revenue as revenue, so it made it look like they were balancing their budgets and stuff when
right.
they weren't, because the money was there. It's like, don't worry about it. It's in U.S. Treasury. It's as safe as can be.
They've got a vault.
It is. You know, I'm going to say, people ring that bell, but I tell people, oh, Social Security is absolutely safe. The trust funds are absolutely safe. People are like, oh, you think so? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's just understand that they're safe, and they are on the priority list of getting paid out because it is in U.S. Treasuries. It's the prime payoff. It's just like, you know, any treasuries we loan anywhere else. But when we start having to pay it out, when it goes upside down in a meaningful way, I said, understand, it's going to suck all the air out of the room for everything else. Your roads, you're not going to have money for roads because you're obligated to pay it. Everything else is budgeted. This is not budgeted. This is obligated.
This is
it's like inviting a 600-pound mosquito to your backyard party, because when it hits you, it's going to suck all the blood out of you.
It's already having that effect. There's no doubt about that. We're going to go to commercial real quick, guys. When we get back, I tell you, I want to go to George Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin. I am so sick of mainstream media, you know, aiding and abetting the liberal mindset agenda and those racist idiots like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson trying to get a preconceived outcome to this, not based on fact or evidence. We're going to break down some of the problems with the prosecution's case when we get back. You're listening to the Ed Springer Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springer of the My View Matters Radio Show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities.
politics.com. I tell you, the one story that's going on that's driving everybody nuts, everybody is paying attention to this, whether they like it or not, is the George Zimmerman trial. For those of you who have been living in some kind of a cave somewhere for over a year, back in 2012, George Zimmerman killed Trayvon Martin in what Zimmerman described as a fight for his life. Trayvon Martin was supposedly on top of him after being followed by George Zimmerman, as a block watch neighborhood person. Trayvon allegedly attacked Zimmerman, came up behind him, knocked him down, and Zimmerman, of course, had a gun in his waist, pulled it out, and shot Trayvon. The question has been, since the very beginning, was this self-defense or not? What was really interesting to me, and you know what, I want to point this out too real quick, because I'm getting sick of some of these other people continuing to send me email with a new picture of Trayvon Martin with tattoos all over his neck and all over his face. There's no doubt that Trayvon Martin was not the 12-year-old sweet little innocent kid pitcher that they tried to put out there, no more than the pitcher that they put out of George Zimmerman was the same guy he was in 2005. The mainstream media has done such an insult to the American people and our level of intelligence throughout this whole thing. It is mind-boggling. But somebody keeps sending a pitcher around. I've got it five times today with a Trayvon Martin. This guy is supposedly Trayvon Martin, has tattoo on his face that has L.A., which is a gang, and all this other crap, tattoos everywhere, a beard and mustache, all this other junk. Folks, let me tell you something. That is a hoax email. It's not true. Quit forwarding that garbage. This case is built on factual evidence that should clear George Zimmerman, and I firmly believe that. But the guy that you're getting in your pictures right now in your email is a guy by the name of Jason Terrell Taylor. He's also known as The Game. He is a 32-year-old rapper from Compton, California. He's known as The Game. That was his name when he was a rapper. He also got Grammy nominations in 2006. For working with rapper 50 Cent on an album, and he's not a racist at all. As a matter of fact, he describes himself as being far from a racist. He describes himself as being educated and intellectual, and he don't understand why, you know, so many black people have all these racist tendencies. But this guy is not who you're looking for, so please quit sending out this pathetic email that's trying to get everybody to sympathize with you and prove something that doesn't matter. Now, on with the story. As we know, in April of 2012, Florida State Attorney Angela Corey drew up an affidavit of probable cause against George Zimmerman and called a second-degree murder on Trayvon Martin. What a lot of people don't realize is the original investigation backed George Zimmerman's claim of self-defense. The Martin family met with the governor of Florida. And as soon as they got through with that meeting, the governor of Florida appointed Florida State Attorney Angela Corey to be a special prosecutor in this particular case. She's the one that drew up the affidavit. Angela Corey lied throughout that affidavit and was found or actually brought up on charges by a citizen grand jury and indicted herself for falsifying the application and committing perjury. Of course, that won't go anywhere because that's a citizen's grand jury and not a legitimate grand jury because nobody will let the American citizens who own the grand jury actually speak to the grand jury personally. But that's how everything got started. So George Zimmerman was arrested based on lies. For the next year or so, mainstream media was out selling this affidavit as gospel. They were telling the whole world that these were the facts, that Angela Corey was the facts, and, you know, George Zimmerman would be convicted for the killing of Trayvon Martin. Nobody, until now, nobody wanted to touch Trayvon Martin and his problems. They didn't want to talk about the three times he was suspended. They didn't want to talk about the fact he was a thief. They didn't want to talk about the fact that he was a drug user. I mean, his own mother said her son never had any problems with gangs or the police. She said that when she transferred him out of Carroll City High School so he could be closer to home, the school she transferred him from begged her to let him stay at Carroll City because they liked him and he was a good student. Well, if Carroll City High School liked him and he was a good student, somebody explained to me why Trayvon Martin had been suspended for tardiness and truancy. That's not a good student. Explain to me why he's carrying a bag with a marijuana pipe and traces of marijuana in it on school property. That's not a good student. That's not a good guy. Explain to me why he was putting graffiti all over school walls. Explain to me why he had 12 pieces of jewelry that included wedding bands and earrings with diamonds. This is the stuff mainstream doesn't want to tell you about. And this is the problem. Go, Mr. Martin.
Well, again, whenever you go Trayvon, I'm going to go back to Dale Gillespie, what he said right after it happened. Got two people habitually looking for trouble. They may not necessarily run into each other, but they're going to find trouble. And that's what we've got. That's why I don't stay that interested. And I think, I honestly think when it comes to slamming the media, this is their, you know, the classic puppy in a pipe thing. This is, if they characterize this for what it really is. Two troublemakers, basically. I know Zimmerman was trying to be, you know, the citizen's arrest Barney Fife, but but you got two guys out looking for trouble. They found each other. End of story. One, you know, one of them died. That's going to happen a lot when you go looking for trouble. If you got the jury from breaking into houses, hey, guess what? Sooner or later, somebody might blow you right back out that back door. You know, you go trying to sell that stolen stuff, or you do drugs. Sooner or later, gunplay might come into being. You know, you go around tailing people. You know, you see somebody walking down the street that doesn't look like they belong there in your assessment, and you go tail them. Hey, sooner or later, that person's, you know, you're gonna, as they always say, you're gonna run up on the wrong guy. He's gonna turn around and kick your ass. That's what this story is, but the media doesn't want to let it go because if they can, if as they did early on, they can make this about a, you know, posting these little pictures of a 12-year-old kid, and they can get it ginned up enough. It's, you know, I'm always going to say it. I don't think they're sinister. I don't think a lot of the media is smart enough to be sinister. I think they're lazy. I think they get this story ginned up, and once they got it ginned up, they looked at it and said, "Damn, this thing's got legs. We're going to be able to run with this for ages."
Well, they've got, the problem is they are lazy, and they're not lazy, they're manipulative. I mean, it's not just lazy. If they wanted to report the news as they should, report honestly and fairly, that'd be one thing. But instead, they want to keep manipulating the news and creating the racial tensions and everything else. You know, another thing here that is really, I have problems with, you know, is during the testimony yesterday, you know, we had all kinds of testimony going on. You know, Trayvon's dad, when he heard the tape, during the original investigation, he heard the tape more than once. And when he was asked if that was Trayvon's voice, he told the officers no. Two officers were interviewing him, and both of them he told no. So when it came to time to testify, all of a sudden he testified that was definitely Trayvon's voice. He knew it was Trayvon's voice because he heard it, you know, 20 times. But he had already heard it previously during the original investigation, and he ignored it. So he's already been caught lying. And, of course, that's, folks, I got to tell you something. There is not any trial that goes on that some attorney doesn't sit down with a potential witness and try to get you to lie or at least skirt the law when it comes to testimony. And that's exactly what happened here. So then you've got the Sanford Police Chief, Bill Legas, on the stand. And, you know, this tape was played for the mayor with the Martins in the room, you know, and Bill Lee was told that the city manager wouldn't let him in the room while the recording was being played for the family. Now, here's the Sanford police chief, and they don't want him in the room while the recording's being played. Why? So they can make the story match up. There's no doubt that this has been a scam from the governor on down since the very beginning of this. You know, Lee said he was against the playing of the 911 call in the mayor's office. He didn't believe the recording should have been played for a group. Quite honestly, I don't know of any credible investigation where you put a group of people that could be potential witnesses in the same room and let them sit there and talk each other into what they heard. It's supposed to be done individually, you know. And when you couple that with the governor appointing Angela Corey at the same time he's meeting with the Martin family, you couple that with playing this recording in a mayor's office with a bunch of people that should have been separated, you put all of this into play, I don't think we can avoid anymore the discussion that this was a scam, that this was set up from the beginning to appease those like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson. I just don't think we can ignore that anymore, Ed.
No, I don't think you can, and I think between Sharpton, you know, the guys that are stirring the pot, the politicians who are too freaking gutless to look at everybody and say, look, this happens when troublemakers bump into each other. You know, they're too gutless to look at people and say that. Like, sorry, you know, it happens all the time. It happens 15 times a weekend in Chicago, okay? But, you know, I think that and the media running with this and being lazy, and I say they're manipulative, but they're manipulative so that they can be lazy. Like I said, to gin this thing up, get some momentum behind it. And this is a ready-made story. This is, you know, if you're going to do 16 minutes of news and a half hour national, you know, NBC News or whatever, this one's got four of it. You only got to fill up 9 minutes. That's lazy. So I think they've all basically, as my grandfather used to say, they've all tied their ass to the saddle on this thing. And now that, you know, they didn't do their due diligence, they didn't report right, they allowed everybody to get ginned up. So now that when the facts start coming out, Zimmerman's
But you
walk.
know, But you know, well, listen, I don't think he's going
to
walk.
They wanted to hang him, but now it's starting to look like he's going to walk, and they've all got their, you know, their undies in their bunch because now that town is ready to explode. Of course, the mainstream media doesn't give a rat's ass because they would love nothing more in some cases than for some buildings to burn because all you got to do is fly around in a helicopter and take pictures, you know, and you got another ready-made story. You'll probably get 6 months out of that crap.
Well, and, you know, and I don't think he's going to walk. I said from the beginning, they're going to have to nail him with something because they're worried about the racial tensions that they allowed the mainstream media to make to appease people like Jackson and Sharpton who've never done a damn thing in their life but live off of race baiting. Now, they're going to get him. If they've got a downgrade to involuntary manslaughter, they're going to nail him for something. I'm fairly sure of that. Mayo, you are back on the air, my friend. What's up?
Well, I mean, have to make this quick, and then you throw me back in the queue, kind of take pause to what, or put devil's advocate, what Ted Martin keeps saying, you know, two people looking for trouble. Well, I mean, that's a police officer's job is to look for trouble. Somebody who volunteers for a neighborhood watch, that's their job is to look for trouble. I mean, what was it? Sir Edmund Burke said, you know, all it takes for evil to succeed is for good men to do nothing. You know, for, you know, Zimmerman, I mean, here he had, you know, people in the housing association, the police captain and a sergeant and other people talked about, you know, how he had been such a good neighborhood watch person calling stuff in before. Did he maybe, you know, make a mistake, get his, you know, his in over his head? Possibly, yes. Did he have a concealed carry permit? Yes, but he didn't have the same kind of training as a police officer, and he may have gotten over his head. You know, those are things, you know, I kind of take, you know, pause at when Ed Martin says that. If we don't look for trouble, if we don't step in and help defend somebody or take a stand against something when trouble happens, then we are being as bad as the liberals are in ignoring it.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, in this case, George Zimmerman did what he had always done as a block watch neighborhood captain. Anytime he saw something that was suspect, he immediately called it in. And that's what he did here. Otherwise, we wouldn't have the recordings of the conversations that went on. You know, and when he was told not to follow, he said, okay, and turned around to go back to his truck. And that's when he said he was confronted by Martin. Okay, I get that. Trayvon Martin, not Ed Martin. Sorry, Ed. You know, but you know, we got to get that out there, man. But, you know, it's interesting because when you sit here and you talk about the potential profiling and all these other things, I mean, last night is a good example of what happened with me in my neighborhood. I live in a nice, quiet neighborhood. I live at the end of a dead-end street. You know, a lot of people walk down my street. It ends at a ditch line, and they run this ditch line all night long. Most of it's not but a bunch of hooligan teenagers that don't have nothing better to do. And I say hooligan teenagers, and not because I'm trying to profile them, but they walk around in packs of four or five, as they did last night. There were five teenagers decided to come down my street. I happened to be down on the corner of my small dead-end street and talking with a neighbor. This was 11:45 at night. Now, this neighborhood has a bunch of little kids who are in bed, you know, a bunch of neighbors, you know, who are trying to sleep. They got to get up and go to work in the morning. At about 11:45 at night, this pack of five teenagers decided to walk down the street, top of their lungs, F this, F that, you know, doing everything they can to just call it a ruckus. Well, I'm outside sitting on the porch of my neighbor's house in the dark because we don't have porch lights on at night when we're sitting outside. And, you know, and I told him, I said, guys, can you please do me a favor? Just tone it down. We've got kids that are asleep and people have to go to work in the morning. You know, one of them decided to yell back at me, F you. Now, was I profiling? No. These guys were loud. They were doing something wrong. They didn't need to be doing that. And all I did was, you know, please, will you tone it down? And I get an F you. Well, immediately, I stand up on the porch, you know, and I said, excuse me. I started walking that way. And they decided to take off running like the little bitches that they were. But the point is, they had to be confronted because that behavior will continue to be tolerated. In the case of George Zimmerman, he called the authorities and did not confront Trayvon Martin. He did not confront Trayvon Martin, according to his testimony, and everything says that he's right. If you look at forensic pathologist Dr. Vincent DeMeo today, he's an expert on gunshot wounds. He's written and co-authored all kinds of articles. You can go read this online. He's wrote a book on the subject of forensic pathology. He said the shot that killed Trayvon Martin passed through Martin's clothing because Martin's clothing was hanging 2 to 4 inches from his skin. That proves that Trayvon Martin was leaning forward or leaning over something. Zimmerman said Martin was on top leaning over him when he shot. And the doctor goes on to say, if you're lying on the back, the clothing is going to be against your chest. That's common sense, folks. Since we know the facts prove that the clothing was 2 to 4 inches away, It is consistent with someone leaning over the person doing the shooting. And let's not forget the size here, folks. You've seen all these idiotic pictures mainstream's trying to cram down your throat. But Trayvon Martin was not some little kid, sweet and innocent 12-year-old looking guy. No more than George Zimmerman was a 250-pound, badass, white Hispanic. You know, the media's new term for Hispanics in America, I guess. No, Trayvon was about 6 foot to 6 foot two, depending on which source you want to use. And he weighed somewhere between 165 and 175 pounds. George Zimmerman, on the other hand, was 5'8" and was not the 250-pound guy that they tried to show you in a daggone photo from 2005. They didn't show the recent photo. The photo shows him at 5'8" and about 200 pounds. So Trayvon Martin was clearly bigger than Zimmerman. Trayvon Martin, the facts prove that Trayvon Martin was on top of Zimmerman when he got shot. The facts prove all of this. So how can we sit here and continue to allow the media to continue playing this? And the doctor, of course, said that, you know, everything that Zimmerman told the police is consistent with the pathology that they found. So that is very, very damning evidence. But they're going to find this guy guilty of something, aren't they, Ed?
I don't think they are. I don't think they are. I think the evidence is going to come up. And another thing, you know, a lot of times prosecutions, when they get ginned up like they have, they go for too much. I mean, you can't take too high a charge and then have them come back with, you know, aggravated assault. You can't knock it down. They're limited. The juries probably should be limited in what they can charge him with. And I think what they're going for is too much. And I think he's going to get off. And I think when he gets off, that's when the media and everybody else is, you know, they're going to be responsible for what happens to some degree. But I also think they're going to love it. They're going to get more play out of it. You know, if things happen, they're going to get more play out of it, more stock footage, more buildings burning and angry people, and you know, and almost like inflatable toys. The activists, the guys trying to gin up more unrest, will pop up all over South Florida or whatever. No, I think he's going to walk, and I think this is just, we're going to move into the next phase of it, and we're not going to hear the end of this for years and years and years. It's going to be like the Rodney
right.
King thing.
Oh, and I think it's definitely going to be a lot like the Rodney King thing, except I think the roles will be reversed. I think that he will be found guilty of something. They're not going to let him get away and walk away from this because they're too scared to do that, because they're too scared of the black backlash. I mean, let's call it what
it is.
They're too
invested in it. They are.
I mean, you know, exactly.
I don't think that's going to help them.
Well, we're going to go into a little bit of overtime because we've got about 2 minutes left. And I'm going to go into overtime for a minute because I want to point a few things out. You can go to theamericanthinker.com, folks, and I'll go ahead and put that link in the chat room for you guys that are there. So I want you to be able to read this yourself. But, you know, they bring up some interesting situations. It's there now for you guys who want to look at it. But they're pointing out 10 different things that the prosecution screwed up on. For example, you know, when you talk about Rachel Jontel, you know, she was a heavyset, you know, daughter that couldn't read cursive and couldn't hardly speak English, but she knows everything, right? They made her, you know, the prosecution made her one of their big witnesses. Turns out she was lying from the very beginning. She tried to tell everybody she was 16 and a minor. That was a lie. She was 18. She said she had been hospitalized when she heard Martin had died. That was a lie. There's all kinds of lies in this girl that they try to prop up. Then you've got Mary Kuchar. She was pissed. She was long described, I think, as witness number five. I can't remember exactly, but I think it was witness number five. But, you know, she was angry because the police took a statement from her, and she didn't like the fact that she didn't get any kind of TV time. So she goes on Anderson Cooper and all these other things, stands with the Martin family and everything else. And, oh, lo and behold, the sworn testimony that she gave to the police was entirely different than what she went on TV telling everybody. So, you know, we've got to look at this. So, I mean, we've got all of this stuff out there. What's mainstream media doing? Nothing. These are stories that we had to find out in alternate media.
That's the thing. They turn the cameras on. I'm telling you, Ed, they're lazy. They're not evil. They're somewhat manipulative, but they're manipulative in the way that it sets them out to be lazy. They're lazy. could have checked that the girl was 16 or 18. They easily could have. Somebody makes a statement, you know, somebody, a reporter could have just said, to look at the police and says, that's congruent. That meshes up well with what she told you, right? And the other cop could just look at him and go, No.
Oh, exactly. And let's get back to Jeantel, because it's really interesting. She changed her testimony so many times, I can't believe she could even be called to the stand. I can't believe the prosecution was even that stupid. But, you know, she was a girl that was supposedly on the phone with him. And, of course, we know she lied about everything. But clearly, one thing that she put out in every version that she had, she heard on the phone where Trayvon Martin confronted Zimmerman and asked, why are you following me? Now, where she kept lying was her aunt was Zimmerman's answers. The first time she said, Zimmerman said, what are you talking about? She changed her mind twice and then got to the trial, and then she played the game, what are you doing around here? Now, there's a big difference in that terminology, folks, but the one constant thing that she did say was that Trayvon Martin was the one who confronted Zimmerman, and that's based on her saying that Trayvon told George, why are you following me? So that is very interesting. Then, of course, you've got Judicial Advocate General, Captain Alex Scarpin, Carter, it's an African-American prosecutor witness, you know, had testified that Zimmerman took a course in criminal law back in 2010. You know, the prosecution was all screwed up because as soon as the defense got to cross-examine, Zimmerman's lawyer stood up, you know, or talked to the Alexis Carter and said, do you see George over here? And pointed. Zimmerman stood, nodded. And Carter said, how you doing, George? Just like, you know, we're great buddies, you know. And, you know, there's no monster here. So that's a big thing. And, of course, we've got, you know, state witnesses Wendy Dorival, Chris Serino. Chris Serino was a lead Sanford investigator. He played the 911 tapes for Tracy Martin, Trayvon's father, 2 days after the shooting. Serino asked Martin if the voice on a 911 tape was his son's. Serino testified that Martin said no. You know, then you had Officer Singleton, who was another investigator, and confirmed everything that Serena had said. That Trayvon Martin's dad said, no, he was not the one yelling. You know, so then you get into the you know, prosecutor that says, okay, man, this is what we need you to say on the stand. Now, are you 100% sure that it wasn't Trayvon? Are you 100% sure? You get pounded with that kind of stuff. And you know, well, I don't know. Well, okay then. So you don't know if it was Trayvon, so you don't know that it wasn't Trayvon, right? That's the way they do that. I know this. I've been part of that scam. They try to tell you what to say and lead you into something to where you are so screwed up by your own attorney, you don't even know what's going on. So, you know, we sit here. You know, and even the attorneys asked the lead investigator, do you think George Zimmerman was telling you the truth? And Officer Serino said, yes. So, you know, and then immediately, of course, the next day, the prosecution says, oh, well, you know, we called this guy as a witness, but now we want his, you know, this statement, you know, stricken from the record. Why would you strike that from the record? Because you know your client's guilty. And then, of course, the only decent person that they had, the only credible witness that they had, if you will, was Jonathan Good. He was, you know, he lived right across the street from where it went, took effect. He said he opened his door to look outside when he heard the noise. He saw a black man with a black hoodie on top of the other guy, a white guy with a red sweatshirt on the ground that was yelling out, help. Well, that's exactly what George Zimmerman said happened. We've got an eyewitness that just gave you a description of it. So, you know, here we've got all of this. And it's incredible to me. And, of course, mainstream's not telling you, by the way, Trayvon, you know, knows martial arts, practices martial arts and things like that. So, you know, here's the problems with these folks. How do you do this? How do we sit here and hold this guy accountable and call him guilty? Because that's exactly what's going to happen, Ed, based on this evidence. I honestly believe mainstream media fabricated every bit of this, worked with the governor of Florida, worked with the mayor of Sanford, and orchestrated every damn bit of this because they need a guilty verdict because a black guy was shot. But in the meantime, they're going to ignore all the black-on-white violence that has become epidemic around the country, and we're going to cover some of that tomorrow night. But how do you do this, Ed? How do they justify? How do they sleep at night?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the media, like you say, we always tend to get after the media. And they... I don't understand how Jackson and the, you know, Sharpton types, I don't know how the activists are ginning this stuff up. I don't know how the politicians did allow it to go too far. I mean, this was a huge crapshoot, is what it was, with, you know, with potentially explosive outcomes. It's, you know, if it was a little closer or something, if people would have gathered their facts, they maybe could have stepped off. But like I say, they've just let this thing build up and fester and build up. And now I'm telling you, you think for political purposes, this guy's going to get hit with some kind of charge. I don't think he is. I think a lot of, you know, it's beyond a reasonable doubt. That's what you need to convict. And I don't think they've got it. I think they've got the reasonable doubt in spades. And I don't think they're going to convict him. And I think it's going to blow up.
Well, I hope you're right.
The media, the activists, and the politicians couldn't accept, you know, they just could. They looked at it on the very surface and couldn't accept that, again, two guys looking for trouble found each other.
Well, I think you're right about that. But with that said, we are at the end of the show, folks. I appreciate you sticking around for that extra couple of minutes because I just want to get that out there so bad. I've been trying to get to it. Final thoughts, Mr. Martin? Mr. Ed Martin,
well,
that is.
So you're saying he's going to get convicted of something. I'm saying he's not. We're going to go beer on that?
Well, of course. Don't we always?
Okay. Well, gloating or, you know, bragging rights either way, but I think he's off. So, you know, final thoughts. Been pasted in the media today, and like I say, just look for cause and effect. A lot of times, you know, if you're old enough, you remember how dry the media used to be. You remember Walter Cronkite. You know, your dad wanted to watch him, and he puts you to sleep. But the man did his job. He reported facts, and hey, sometimes that's why it's boring. The facts can be boring. The facts can be loaded with minutiae. The facts can be loaded with figures, you know, that maybe make you want to walk away. But nowadays, it's all the thrill, the emotion. Also, when you see the cause and effect, why is the media ginning this up? Why do they seem to focus on things that put your heart and don't stimulate your mind? It's because they just want to keep you to the TV long enough with as little effort as possible so that you'll zero in while you're in that emotional mood and buy whatever the hell it is they're selling. And that's it.
Well, I totally agree with you. From my perspective, folks, it's real simple. You know, we need something to divert our attention from the real issues. And I'm not trying to make light of Trayvon Martin getting killed. You know, a 17-year-old dying, there is never an excuse in America for that. However, when you choose to go down that path and that lifestyle, you know, there are repercussions for your actions. For these parents to sit here and try to justify, you know, Trayvon Martin, I guess I'm frankly sick of, after the fact, you find out all these negative things and you sit there and say, well, this was a good boy. He was turning his life around. He was doing this. He was doing that. No way he did that. The parents are in denial. The parents are in denial. And that, to me, is probably the biggest travesty of this whole case. I don't see that George Zimmerman did anything wrong as a Block Watch neighborhood leader. I have been a Block Watch neighborhood leader. And that, in effect, you watch your block and you call and make complaints when you see something that doesn't seem right or is out of the ordinary. George Zimmerman lived in a neighborhood that had recently been burglarized over and over and over again. Trayvon Martin did not live in that neighborhood. He was sent there by his mother when he got suspended from school just a few days earlier. So he was somebody new to the neighborhood. You have all of this new crime going on. A Block Watch leader sees him and says, I better call somebody. This is out of the ordinary. That's what you do. Now, Ed Martin has said that these were two guys looking for trouble and they found each other. I totally agree with that sentiment. But does that mean that one guy has to go to jail when the evidence clearly shows that he was right in the way he handled this? Did George Zimmerman fear for his life? Trayvon Martin is on top of him based on the testimony today, the pathological report that proves George Zimmerman told the truth. George Zimmerman had cuts on the back of his head consistent with getting his head beat against the concrete. He also had a bloodied and looked like a broken nose from the front pictures that we've been able to see, the only real pictures the media put out, and they waited 9 months to do that. The bottom line is this. George Zimmerman was looking for trouble because he set himself up to do that. Trayvon Martin was looking for trouble because he set himself up to do that. But the reality is the trouble began long before these two guys ever found each other. The trouble began in the home of Trayvon Martin, who came from a broken home and a father and mother who essentially, really, truly, didn't do their job at raising this child right, or he wouldn't have been in the problems that he had. He wouldn't have had those problems. Those problems started when he was a youngster, not a 17-year-old punk thug. And that's all Trayvon Martin was. If Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson want to call me, I'll make it easy for you. 502-742-8519. Call me and raise all the hell you want because I'm not scared of your punk thug ass either. George Zimmerman's family failed him. George Zimmerman was brought up by a dad who was an advocate general or something with the court system, but these guys were only officers of the court. They weren't judges. He was a magistrate. I apologize. George Zimmerman thought he knew the law. He wanted to be a cop and couldn't qualify to be a cop. He was overweight, out of shape, couldn't qualify. So he did the next best thing. He wanted to do a good thing. He thought he was Superman or Batman. I don't know. But he had this installed in him as a kid growing up that there's a right and a wrong and there's nowhere in the middle. But did George Zimmerman do the right thing? All indications, including the prosecution's own witnesses, say yes. Free George Zimmerman. But you know what? It's easy to say free George Zimmerman. And Ed Martin, I'll gladly buy you that beer if you're proven right, and I will be thankful to do so because justice will have prevailed. The problem is George Zimmerman will never be free. George Zimmerman, for the rest of his life, will deal with
this. In a trial of public opinion, he's toast.
George Zimmerman will never be able to walk anywhere without being recognized. George Zimmerman will never be able to get a job anywhere that's going to be of any merit. And George Zimmerman will be paying these attorneys for the rest of his life, no matter where he gets his income from. George Zimmerman's life is effectively over, too. But George Zimmerman has to live with that. That's all we've got for tonight. Tomorrow night, we will be getting into some good national stories. We're going to talk, like I said, we're going to talk about some of this black-on-white crime. I'm getting sick of the mainstream media ignoring it. Everybody's scared to go down that road. Guess what? We're not. We're going to get into that tomorrow night. We're going to get into a whole host of other things. We've got a sheriff in Texas that has decided to tell the U.S. Forestry Service they no longer can enforce any laws there. So we're going to get into that one as well. We're going to get into, just a whole host of things. It was California, not Texas, with the sheriff. We're going to talk about the UN planes. For you guys who don't know, we've had a lot of planes landing at American Air Force bases, and they all got a UN logo on the back of them. And by the way, these guys, the servicemen and soldiers who are witnessing this, are told they didn't see nothing. Think we don't have a problem going on? You better think again. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, 7, same time, same channel. Mr. Martin, I appreciate it, sir, and we will talk to you soon.
All right, sir.
All right. For the rest of you guys, have a great night. Thanks so much for listening. Take care.